Slat die pad saam met Ruben Delmas op Groot FM
90.5.
En dan luister hier. As jy nou verlede week, donderdag aand, op Slat die sporte geskakel het, sê jy gehoor het van Joey Evans en ek is een bykie met hom gesels verlede week en ons het specifiek gesels oor die Red Line events en ons gaan specifiek daarover gesels, maar dit het ek ook gesê donderdag aand dat jy moet ingeskakel wees vandag, want vandag wil ons Joey Evans' story vertel en ek wil hier met hierdie story hoor. Hier is ongelooflik, ek sit klaar met doendervleis as ons nog eers begin praat nie, maar hoor het gaan vannacht hier so en ek gaan het sommer gewoon Engels doen. Joey Evans, sportsman, adventurer and inspirational speaker en your motto in life is you didn't come this far, only to come this far. Listen to this. Completed several marathons and ultra marathons, and I want to pause there and say you must be my best friend now from here on forward. Hiked the Fish River Canyon, finished the Route of Africa Enduro, raced the Botswana in the Botswana Desert 1000, and was the only South African biker. Listen to this. The only South African biker to complete the 2017 Dakar Rally. But not just completed, there's a story to this. He's raced and ridden his dirt bike throughout South Africa and as well as ridden in Kenya, Mozambique, Swaziland, Lesotho, Botswana, Namibia, Morocco, Bolivia. Ach, the list goes on and on. And he's also written a book, and I've not gotten around to read it yet, but I will do, From Para to Dakar. Joey Evans, ladies and gentlemen, how are you doing?
Hey, fantastic. Great to be here. Cheers.
Can't wait to chat to you and tell your story. But before we get there, Red Line events this weekend, it took place. How did it go? And tell us a little bit more for the guys that are listening for the first time. What's it all about?
Yeah, for sure, man. It was a pretty special weekend. You know, I was invited to navigate for Terrence Marsh as part of the Red Line Nissan team.
Yeah.
In the national cross-country race, you know, in the cars. And obviously coming from a motorcycle background, you know, dirt bikes and things, it was a very, very different experience. One of the first things that really hit me was just the speed. You know, the stuff that on a bike, you'd have some rocky sections and stuff, you'd be tapping off that throttle, you know, trying to pick your lines through. These guys just hit the floor with that accelerator and just go straight through it, man. That suspension just works. And so I'm sitting there in the navigator seat and I'm pushing on those floorboards with my brake foot, you know, trying to slow it down. But it was really just a wow experience. Yeah.
Amazing. What is it all about? For who is this? Is it a thing that happens all the time?
Yeah, he's done it a bit with, you know, he's chosen different guys, you know, over the last, you know, couple years. And obviously it adds a bit of publicity for the Red Line Nissan Racing team and the sponsors like Motul and these kind of guys, you know. And they've had guys like Derek Watts and Jack Parrow and a few of the Springbok rugby players do it and that kind of stuff. And he phoned me and asked me to do it, and it was pretty special. I never thought he'd ask me to do that, you know. So it was super cool when I got that call, and I was like a little kid before Christmas, you know. I get to go race some cars.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool.
But I suppose the navigating wasn't that difficult for you. It might be a slight little bit of changes to high, different calls and so on, but is it a lot different?
It was a lot different. You know, I thought it would be a lot more similar. You know, we race with the navigation at Dakar and at Morocco and these kind of places I've been. And as a motorbike, you know, as a motorbike rider, you navigate and you ride. So there's a lot of like look up, look down, trying to make the calls. But I look at a picture, for instance, and it's straightforward. I can see it's going round to the left, over to the right type of thing. Now you've got to say all that in words and like twice the pace, you know.
Of course.
It was a bit of a mindset change. And so in the beginning it was a little bit rough, and Terrence did well to keep us both alive. But, you know, after a while I got into it, and by the end of the day I had it nailed, and we were finally racing. In the beginning we were just surviving. So
yeah. So and result?
Result, we came, I think 8th overall and 4th in our class. So at a national event, that's really good. And it's really good of Terrence to have achieved that in spite of me.
And it also took place in Bronco Sprite, eh?
Yeah, just up the road.
One. Listen, I want to get to your story. I want to get to the book and what you wrote about, and especially what happened about 12 years ago.
Yeah, 2007. Yeah, 11 years ago.
We got to get to that just now.
Slat die pad saam met Ruben Delmas op Groot FM 90.5.
Joey Evans saam in die atelier, en wat een inspirerende ou. Ek moet vir jy sê, hierdie ou se stories. Wat hy al gedoen het. Hey man. It feels like when I'm speaking to you, like the conference is nothing. The conference is nothing to what you had to go through. I mean, you prep for like a year for conference, but you prep a lot longer for something a lot worse than conference. But we'll get to that now. Let's go way back.
Okay.
Where were you born?
I was actually born in the UK. You know, we moved out here when
what?
I was five. So
whereabouts?
Birmingham.
Oh, nice.
So grew up here. I grew up in Kempton Park on the East Rand. I spent, from when I was 5 years old being this side, yeah.
Crazy. And always been an adventurer at heart. Or when did you discover that?
I don't know. My dad used to take us hiking a lot as kids, and that was really cool. I used to enjoy the outdoors a lot, camping, hiking, that type of stuff. But I only, and I always wanted to race motorcycles. That was a dream from when I was young. I had some mates who used to race motocross and things. But I grew up in quite a big family. I was one of six children, so
Okay. There
was there was no money for motorbikes and that kind of stuff. So it actually took me till I was 26 when I bought my first motorcycle.
Yeah. Was it an off-road?
Yeah.
Always been off-road.
Always off-road. Yeah.
Road bikes
in the dirt. I've had a couple of road bikes along the way, but. But dirt bikes is my passion.
Yeah. Okay, and then from there on, you bought your off-road bike, and then you started doing some races, I suppose, did a lot of trails and tracks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then at some point, for every runner, there's this ultimate goal.
For
a cyclist, there might be this ultimate goal. What was your goal?
Yeah, well, on a local level, the goal for a lot of riders is to do the Roof of Africa, which is in Lesotho. And that was one of my goals, but the big goal, which would be, most off-road bikers' big goal, on an international scale, would be the Dakar Rally. That's like the big one. It's the toughest, longest, hardest off-road race in the world. And so, you'd see images on TV of these guys racing through the deserts in North Africa and things. And when I was in my 20s, I saw this and I was like, yeah, that's the one, man. I'm going to race the Dakar Rally one day.
Yeah. And in that time, or was it before that time, you also did a whole lot of runs, ultra marathons and stuff like that?
Mm, yeah, I used to run a lot in my early 20s, which isn't that long ago. It's a long time ago now. I got into running and I was part of a running club, and we used to, I started off with, the 10s and 15s and then up to 21s. And the goal there was to race the Comrades Marathon. And, same as you, your goal.
Yeah.
And that was one of those goals that I didn't achieve, actually. It was... I qualified and I raced some marathons and ultra marathons, and it was a week before the Comrades Marathon. I was playing soccer for a friend's company, actually, just a social soccer game, and I ended up tearing the ligaments in my knee. I was out the race.
A week
before, yeah.
Hectic.
And so I sat there watching Comrades with my leg in a cast, from my ankle up to my hip, and it was just, it was miserable.
Yes, that's the worst
thing. And
then
got into running a bit after that, but never up to that sort of level. I did some 21s and things, but never really got into the ultra marathon stuff again.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get round to it, because I think we've sketched pretty much the background, and then you had this Dakar dream. You wanted to go for this Dakar race.
Yeah.
And we'll get round to the rest of the story just now. So blame net vir is.
Sla die pad saam met Ruben Delmarsh op Groot FM 90.5.
Joey Evans hier by my in die ateljee. En as jy nog nie van Joey Evans gehoor het, jy gaan jy definitief vandag gaan jy weet wie Joey Evans is. Jy gaan beslis. Somebody said it earlier in one of your interviews, your previous interviews. I said you're the most famous South African bike rider. If you're a bike rider, you don't know Joey Evans, jy dan ry jy nie bike nie, dan weet jy nie hoe om bike te ry, wat bike ry behels nie. So Joey Evans in studio, and we spoke about, you said earlier that you're the total adventurer at heart, and you bought your first off-road bike when you were 26. Hey?
That's it, yeah.
Bought your first off-road bike, and you had this ultimate goal to get to Dakar. You started preparing for that, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. That was the big goal at the time. I got married pretty young. I was 23 when I got married.
Nice.
And but hear this, by the time I was 28, I had four daughters.
Excellent.
So there you go.
Nice.
So you want to know about trials, there you go. I'll tell you right there. To do a race like the Dakar Rally would have costed just so much money, like three times what I was earning in a year, it was just crazy. But in the back of my mind, I was like, one day we're going to do that. And in the meantime, I chased other goals like the Roof of Africa and those type of things, and raced different championships. But that dream to race the Dakar along with the rest of my life was just completely destroyed on the 13th of October, 2007.
What happened?
So on that day, I lined up at the start of a race. I'm lying second in the championship. I got to win this race. It was so important at the time. And that was the last thing I remembered, lining up at that race. And the next thing, I'm lying on my back and I'm facing the sky and there's all these heads peering down at me. And what had happened was going into that first corner, it was down in Heidelberg here, and going into that first corner, there was a big high-speed crash. And in the mayhem, I'd been ridden over by the other bikes and things as well.
Oof.
And I lay there and I thought I had stones in my mouth at first, and I started spitting out these stones, but it turned out to be my teeth. I'd shattered 12 of my teeth right down into the gums. But that wasn't the worst injury. The next thing, I realized that I couldn't feel my legs. And so there was just no feeling from my chest down, no feeling, no movement. And there was a lot of complications that day. I ended up lying in the dirt there for about 3 hours. And then I was transferred by road to three different hospitals and actually ended up just up the road here at the MealMed unit here in Pretoria. Hmm. And that was where I learned the extent of my injuries. And what I'd done is I'd broken my T8 and T9 vertebrae in my back and I'd crushed my spinal cord.
Hectic. And that had a lot of, there the goal was gone.
Yeah.
You couldn't ride a bike, obviously.
Yeah, you see, you know, I'd lost all movement in my legs and I was completely paralyzed. And I'd heard words like, you know, quadriplegic and paraplegic and these kind of things, but I didn't really understand what they meant. But lying in that hospital being told that, you know, you're never going to walk again, that this is it, you know.
Doctor said 10% chance of you walking again. Is that right?
Well, that was after they fused my back. Originally, they said, look, you're not going to walk again. It is what it is, you know. And you got to come to terms with it. And those first, you know, few days, there was just nothing. No movement, no anything, you know. And then I got like a little flicker in my right toe, where if I really focused, I could make my right toe just twitch a little bit. And then my back was fused, you know, the doctor fused my back at T8, T9, and then that flicker in my right toe disappeared again, and I had nothing. And my legs were just wasting away, these skinny little legs, and, you know, along with it, you lose all bowel control, all bladder control, you know, your ability to digest food properly. It was terrible, you know, terrible, terrible times, and there's really next to no hope. But then the flicker in my toe came back. And slowly but surely, I started to get a little bit more. And as the weeks and months passed, you know, I started to be able to move my legs a little and eventually be able to stand with these braces on my legs and started taking some first steps again.
Hectic. And from there, it just progressed. Tell us a story.
Yeah, well, then, you know, as I lay there in the hospital, I thought about this dream to race the Dakar Rally. And obviously, at the time, the big thing was just to be able to walk again. You know, it'd be fantastic just to be able to get out the wheelchair and be able to walk, but there was this goal to race the Dakar, and I thought, you know what, I'm still going to race the Dakar Rally. You know, that's just, you know, it was just one of those things that, you know, you need, when you're in a place like that, it's hard, it's difficult, man, on every level, emotional and physical and everything. It was just tough, and I needed a line in the sand to say I'm going to beat this, you know, and I'll know I've beaten it when I race the Dakar Rally. And so slowly but surely learned to walk again. And then the time came to, you know, it was about 2.5 years before I climbed back on a motorcycle just to ride on a flat piece of ground. And I fell over the first time I got on the bike. I couldn't hold it up, but, you know, I started riding again.
Incredible. And then how long did it take you? I mean, eventually you actually completed the Dakar Rally after all this.
Yeah, that's it. It took me 3.5 years before I could enter my first race, because you need to qualify for the Dakar. So over the years, I've got to race now. I've got to get back into racing. And that was scary, man, getting back into race again. But it took me, you know, so over the years, and then built up, did an international rally in Morocco in 2015 eventually, 2016. And then qualified, you know, sent in all my details and entry, and I got an entry to the 2017 Dakar Rally.
Hectic, and completed. But now, I mean, obviously that didn't just, there was a lot of challenges. I mean, what I want to say is, from being a paraplegic to completing the Dakar, obviously that Dakar in itself had its own challenges.
For sure. You know, when I stood on that start line, though, you must remember that I'm not fully able-bodied still.
Exactly.
You know? So I can walk fine. Most people won't notice I've got a problem anymore. But I can't run. I can't jump. I can't feel hot or cold or pain sensation below my chest. And to be frank, I still have to take medication to help me digest food, and I still use catheters.
Yeah.
And so to be in that kind of situation on the start line of the Dakar Rally, you know, it's pretty intimidating.
I can imagine, eh?
Yeah.
And, I mean, even at the Dakar Rally, we're going to get round to that just now. I mean, even at the Dakar, even if it's not, I mean, 10 years later, here you are. You're at the Dakar. You're like, this is it. And this is just going to be, I'm going to complete the Dakar, we're going to write all the lines, speak all the correct lines, and then something happens there as well. And it's unbelievable. We're going to get around to that just now.
Sladdie Pad saam met Ruben Delmas op Groot FM 90.5.
Maar luister, ek is gefassineerd. Ek leer vandag verskriklik baie. Want jy weet, die mense sit ons nou, like you said, you sit on the couch and you watch the comrades. I normally sit on the couch and I watch the deck on. I think these oaks, ach, wat gaan aan met hulle? Hulle weet nie wat hulle doen nie. Hulle lyk asof hulle weet hulle doen. Hulle lyk kreeslik behoorlik baie kry nie. And that's a lot of stuff. I mean, just share a bit about the Dakar. Because, I mean, we spoke off air now. We spoke about how to just navigate, because I mean, I would be scared the whole time that I'm going to get lost.
Yeah, and you do get lost, you know, that's all part of it. You know, you don't have a GPS track or anything like that. You work off a set of instructions that's printed on a roll of paper that's like 10 or 12 meters long with all these little individual instructions on, you know. And you work on a compass heading, so we call them, you know, cap headings. So for instance, if you're racing through deserts where it's just dunes, you race on a compass heading. So you'll race for, say, you know, 8 or 9 kilometers at 220 degrees. Then you take a hard right and you go at 70 degrees for another, you know, 3 or 4 kilometers. Then you go again. So it's all, you get lost frequently.
Yeah,
you know?
And then you need to get back to like you said now, you need to revert back yep. to familiar.
If you get lost, the only thing you can do is retrace your steps and go back to the last place where you knew you were, which can be 40 kilometers back sometimes, but you got to go back there, get back there, and then retrace and work it out again, get it right.
How fast is that Dakar?
The distance is 9,000 kilometers.
Yeah.
So, to give you an idea, like visually how far that is, that's from Cape Town to Cairo plus 1,000 kilometers. That's how far it is. And you do it in 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
And a lot of sleep, eh?
Very, very little sleep.
Hectic. But how many hours do you like ride? Are you on the bike then?
Well, it all depends. You know, obviously, one of the beautiful things about Dakar is that you have the top professionals in the world, right the way down to amateurs like myself. You know, I'm not a top professional racer or anything like that. And so you get to rub shoulders with these top guys. So obviously, the race has to be challenging for the top guys. And so for guys like, you know, they'll race, you know, often 10 or 12 hours a day even. Whereas guys like me, you know, my average day was probably about 17 hours.
Yep.
And I had 2 days in particular where I went 22 hours on the bike.
Yeah. And the terrain and how you need to plan to ride your different lines and all the different textures. Is that the surfaces? That's the right word.
Yeah.
Planning for that and the dangers that goes with this Dakar. I mean, what's the stats?
Yeah, well, to give you an idea, in 39 years of the Dakar Rally, up until my race in 2017, there'd been more than 70 deaths.
What?
In 39 years. So it's and that plays on your mind. You know, I watched it on TV a lot before. Obviously, I'm a big fan. And you hear about these deaths and you're like, it's guys taking big chances and stuff. And suddenly when you're there in the mix of it, in the middle of a desert, for instance, and you got trucks coming over dunes in all directions and they can't see over those dunes and you're on a little bike and you get stuck in the sand and you realize that, man, you can die very easily out here.
You experienced that firsthand.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I got through the race. It was three of us, you know, South Africans that started the race. And the one guy, you know, Walter de Blanche, really good rider. He burnt out his motor at high altitude in the dunes on day four. And on day five, David Thomas, another South African really top rider, he had a big high-speed crash, broke his leg in 9 places. And so I was the last South African left in the race. And I got through it all. It was 13 days, you know, that year. And I got all the way to day 12. And on day 12, I had a massive incident, and I was struggling in the race, and you know, I was lying stone lost in the bike category. But my goal is just to finish, you know, just to get to that finish line, and I was overtaken by a car. And what happens is, you know, you have cars and trucks overtake you every day, and I'd experienced it many times. They have a little system where the guy in the car or the truck will see the biker in the distance or see his dust. They press a button in their car, and it sends off an alarm on your bike. And then as a bike, you get out the way and you stop, and then this vehicle comes racing past. And the purpose of that is to make it safer. And my alarm went off on that day, lying stone lost. I'm riding in a deep rut in like this sort of semi-desert environment. And I turn around expecting to see this car, you know, 200 meters back, and he's like 30 meters back doing double my speed. And I try to turn out the way, get out of this rut, and I just couldn't get out. And I had like 3 or 4 seconds to get out the way, and I couldn't. And as he was right onto me, I just dived off that bike and he just rode right over my bike and just destroyed my bike.
Hectic. That's crazy. And then you laid there. What happened? I mean, now you're hurt. I mean, there's not a lot of people. Did they even stop?
There was no one there. No one. You're in the middle of the desert all on your own. And this guy stopped about 30 meters up and the navigator stood out the car and gave me like a thumbs up. And I was like, you know, I'm on my knees next to this bike.
Yes.
And he just got back in the car and went. And so there I was, just all on my own in the middle of the desert in South America with this bike in pieces, and out of the race on the second last day, just gutted.
But what happened then? What happened?
Well, I dragged the bike out of the track, you know, and stood it up. And I mean, the whole exhaust was flattened. The frame was bent. My handlebars were bent. The the right foot peg completely broken off, all my navigation equipment completely destroyed, the whole carbon fiber tire on the bike broken, petrol tanks all ruptured. You know, my petrol had leaked out. I had just, you have three petrol tanks on the bike, and I just had the one with a couple of liters left, and it just, for all intents and purposes, I'm out this race.
Yeah. And did you complete eventually?
Well, what I did is it's just the craziest, you know, turn of events you can imagine. So
yeah,
I started working on that bike, trying to get it to work again, and it took me, you know, a good part of an hour, and I managed to get the bike working. But yeah, without a right foot peg and with bars bent and the frame bent and stuff, I just kind of limped along, through the desert type area, but off the track, because I couldn't, because there was cars and trucks coming through now and again, and I couldn't stay in that track anymore. And I was just making no ground, and I still had 660 kilometers to race that day. Hmm. And so it was just the worst feeling.
660 kilometers still to go.
And I can't tell you how it feels to be out of the race, but you're still in the race. But there's no ways. I'm running out of petrol. There's no ways I'm going to make it to the next point where I can get petrol. There's no one around. I'm the last biker. No one I can get petrol from. And I'm just pushing on. And I just decided that I would only quit when the time came the next morning. Because in rally, you're only out if you miss your start time the next day. So I can still ride right through the night, you know. Hmm. And so I just kept pushing, and I was running out of petrol, and then the most incredible thing happened. And in the middle of the desert, there was a bike just sitting there. A KTM, 450 rally replica, exactly the same bike as mine,
just sitting there.
And what had happened was the guy whose bike it was, he'd had a high-speed crash, and he'd broken his arms, and he'd been medevaced out in the chopper. And so I came across this bike, and the rules of Dakar is I can't ride that bike. I have to finish on my own bike. But I can strip parts from this bike.
Oh, nice.
And so this guy's out the race. And so,
how was that?
Yeah, and then there was a few Argentinian guys there. You know, just these guys on old dirt bikes following the race in the middle of the desert. They were there by the bike, and they helped me. And we stripped the whole exhaust off the bike, and we siphoned the petrol out of it. And we got a foot peg and put it all on my bike. And by this point, I was now 4 hours behind the second last biker. So he was 4 hours ahead of me, just stone last. And then I decided to ride, and I rode that bike, late into the night. It was 8-9 o'clock at night. I was still riding right up until, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm still riding, and at 11 minutes past two, I rolled into that second last camp of the Dakar Rally.
Hectic. And then, like I said, eventually you just finished the 2017 Dakar. And I mean, the stories that you can tell, because I mean, we've got so limited time. You've got a book out.
That's it.
Where there's so much more. I mean, you leaving out a lot of info a lot of detail, because there's so much more to tell. Mm. You've got a book out where you've written all about it. Am I right? What's that book called?
Yeah, that's it, It's called From Para to Dakar.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to write the book. You know, I wrote it all myself, and it was a book that was really good for myself, from a point of view that you can put it all down. You know, all the feelings about, you know, being paralyzed, you know, life in a wheelchair, and then building up to this goal that people around you thought was ridiculous, that you're never going to achieve it and
And
slowly but surely, this 10-year journey, and you know, the support I got from my wife Meredith and my children, and so many friends and family, and all this, you know, this, you know, just slowly etching away to achieve this goal. Yeah. You know,
incredible. Your if you had to, I'm going to put you on the spot now. One sentence for people that's going through really hard times in life, where they just feel, you know what, I just cannot go on anymore. I mean, you've been through that not just once, not twice. You've been through it many a times at the worst and the hardest places in life possibly that one can imagine. One sentence for people that just cannot, they decided, you know what, I cannot go on anymore.
Yeah.
What's that one sentence from Joey Evans?
I had a quote that I had on my bike, and it was on my bike, you know, on my handlebars, where I could see it for quite a lot of time during the race. And it's not a quote I've made up myself. It was just, you know, a quote I found on the internet that I just really liked in it.
Yeah.
And it says, "You didn't come this far to only come this far." And I wanted to remember what I'd been through, you know, my whole life. And no matter how bad Dakar got, no matter how tough it got, no matter what we had to suck up, it was 2 weeks, man. I could do it. And so when you have those things happen in your life, you got to think about everything that you've been through to get you this far, that's made you the person you are. And when you think about that, it gives you a bit of perspective. And it's not about how your story starts or about the trials and stuff. It's how it ends. And you make sure you write a good ending to that story.
Unbelievable. Joey Evans, ladies and gentlemen, please tell me, where can people follow you on social media, websites, just to get you, maybe to come and talk to them, maybe someone, because I mean, you do talks as well, right?
That's it, yeah, that's what I do. I do it full time now. You know, I do talks for companies and, you know, clubs and schools and all that type of stuff. And my website is just joeyevans.co.za. I'm on Facebook as well quite a bit, you know, Joey Evans, and also From Para to Dakar.
Yeah.
And the book's available in exclusive books, as well as at some sportsman's warehouses and a lot of KTM dealerships as well.
Yeah, cool, man. What an inspiration. I'm so glad that the only thing that I have to do is like the comrades. I mean, I just need to do the comrades. I mean, it's just like 89Ks. I mean,
One's trying to kill you there.
Exactly, yeah. Joey, what an inspiration, man. Thank you so much for taking time to us. And we're going to be podcasting this at a later stage as well for people to listen to again. So go out, create the book for yourself. I'm proud to Dakar. Akidom Gekre, thank you so much for the copy.
Pleasure.
Signed copy. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to definitely be reading that, and yes, I hope to. Are you planning on doing it again?
Oh man, you know, just the way it ended and everything that happened, I'd never go back to South America. You know, it was just everything it could have been, and yes, you know, to go back wouldn't match up to that.
Yeah,
but it moves around. You know, the Dakar Rally has been held in North Africa, in South America. They've raced, you know, so many places, and if it came to South Africa in the next few years, we might have to squeeze out one more.
Now, look at that. I will not be joining you. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, legendary. Man, thank you so much. You're really inspiring me. And I'm going to be keeping you close on my WhatsApp in my run-up to that, comrades. So I'm going to be chatting to you a lot. Thank you so much for your time.
Cheers, man. Thank you, buddy.
Dames en here, Joey Evans.
Slaat die pad saam met Ruben Delmas op Groot FM 90.5.